Well, good afternoon. I'm glad that didn't go on much longer because I get really embarrassed when it goes on too long. And that was reaching. It was very lovely. But reaching the part where after you mention the name, then that's all there is to say. I'm Beth Dupuy. I'm so happy to be able to speak to you all today. And Pat and I hope to give you a somewhat carefree look at the Berkeley Project, to tell you a little bit of an overview about what it's been and hopefully touch on some of the things that we think are important to you. It's my understanding that a lot of you come from the library, some of you come from the faculty here on campus, some of you from our administration, and I'm sure I've probably missed a couple other groups, maybe some campus partners. So we'll try and hit on various topics that we think will interest or intrigue you about our project. It's been a four-year project. We still have about 1 year remaining, so we've had our last cohort of faculty that we're going to have introduced into the project before we really study and analyze what the outcomes are. So we're a little more than halfway through, but what we want to tell you about today are a little bit of an overview of what this project was about, what some of our initial goals were, who we partnered with and why, and then Pat's going to talk a little bit about the Institute itself and what sort of contents we talk about and the approaches for that, which has been a really well-received institute and one of the key facets of our project. And then I'll come back and talk a little bit about the library faculty collaboration and what some of the outcomes of that event, some surprising, some probably not so surprising. And then we hope at the end to talk a little bit about the evaluation and assessment, because I think that's a really important part to cover, sort of what do we know so far, or what do we think we know so far, and how have we gone about finding out. And hopefully we can really accomplish all that in half an hour without talking too quickly. So we'll talk really generally about each of these things. And then we hope to leave at least half an hour for your questions and hopefully tell us the topics that interest you or your responses. Over the last, I guess just this morning, though it seems like I was going to say a couple days, just this morning we talked to some groups here from the Information Fluency team and have read some of the work and reports that you all have created at Cornell, so we know and have a deep appreciation for a lot of the things you are doing. And I think there's one thing to say is there's a lot of overlap between maybe our campus cultures, a lot of similarity between Berkeley and Cornell and sort of how we're structured and how we're organized and how we appreciate a really wide range of disciplines and depth for undergraduates and graduate students and faculty. And it's important to us to cover all those bases in a really respectful way and in a way that makes sense to each of the disciplines. So I think that this approach we'll talk to you about today, you'll find probably resonates with your campus culture and with your library culture. It's a little bit different than some of the other undergraduate research or information literacy projects that have been done at other institutions, primarily because it really does allow people to opt in, creates opportunities for people to participate, puts a lot of resources that we already have available on campus, pulls them together in new ways, and tries to come to outcomes that we develop as a group on our campus, as opposed to just the library coming in and setting an agenda. So I think you'll find those are some of the principles for us. Our grant is funded by the Mellon Foundation, which is wonderful for us because it brought us some notoriety, I guess. But certainly this same kind of project could be done with another kind of funder or a donor of some sort, or maybe one of you is really wealthy and wants to sponsor something like this for campus. But really it gave us an opportunity to look for 4 years at how we wanted to change the nature of large enrollment, lower division undergraduate classes. On our campus, we had started to launch into a Western accreditation review. Our WASC is our accreditation group. It was about that time for our campus to look at those accreditation themes that we wanted to reach and set for ourselves of what we really wanted to change on our campus or focus on. And with a new chancellor coming in and with some new key other positions on our campus, undergraduate research came as one of those top issues, one of the top two or three issues for our campus to address. The library had recently had a new AUL position that was hired, and it seemed like the perfect opportunity for that AUL position and the Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education to work together and develop a proposal that could really look at what the campus wanted to do for undergraduate research that would touch all disciplines and that would really inform these large enrollment classes, which are a characteristic of a lot of our research institutions, where particularly first year, but sometimes second year and sometimes even third year students are in these large classes, and we want to change the nature of learning in those classes. The other component we wanted to have which was stated in our introduction, it's really important for us to make connections between undergraduate research and library collections and the information seeking skills and critical thinking skills. So we didn't exactly just want to have the students be active in the classroom in a different way, but we also wanted to develop the kinds of skills that they could use throughout their careers and build on to really have them become excellent scholars. Our project was originally funded in January 2003, and one of the key components of our project is kicks off with the selection of some faculty fellows. And there's an open call on our campus for faculty to volunteer or apply to be the fellows for that year. We select usually up to 15. Some years we've selected a slightly smaller group based on the applications and the kinds of courses we would be dealing with. These could be new courses developed or courses that were already on the books that faculty wanted to reshape. There were a number of criteria that were important to us. One was that they be large enrollment, which for us means about 100 plus students. Another is that they met one of the campus requirements. So that could be a requirement for the major or a requirement for American cultures, which is the one thing students have to take a class in on campus, similar to maybe you have a campus requirement like that. We also really wanted to encourage faculty who would come together with another person that they taught the course with or that taught that same course in subsequent semesters so we could create kind of a little cohort within those departments. We always had more applications than we could handle. One approach that we did over the last couple years is talk to department chairs and had them help us identify one or two stars within their department that they thought could really help inform this approach. Somebody who was really committed to undergraduate education was one of the requirements, but they didn't necessarily have to be new to campus or be senior to campus. They could be in any range of experience here, but they just really had to be committed to undergraduate education. Some of our principles then is we really wanted to develop kind of a cohort of faculty across all sorts of disciplines that were committed to changing the ways they teach and open to partnering with other groups on campus. Within this particular grant, the three principal investigators are the university librarian, Tom Leonard, the vice provost for undergraduate education, which is Dr. Maslach, and then also the dean of the undergraduate division of letters and science. And that particular college has about 85% of the undergraduate population. So three really prominent people on our campus, all committed to the same goal, and they help the overall direction of the grant in general. As the project director, I work with and report through them around issues of the budget and that sort of thing, but a lot of the decisions about the actual grant and how we implement things happen through the steering committee. There's about eight people on that steering committee, and they are all the representatives from the other campus partner groups that work with us. So this is not really just a library initiative, although there's a number of us from the library involved, but there are also other groups, including the Graduate Student Instructor Teaching and Resource Center, and the Office of Educational Development that deals with faculty training and support on our campus, Educational Technology Services, which is sort of the arm that deals with the learning management systems, much like Blackboard, and ours are a little different on our campus, the Student Learning Center, and also the Center for American Cultures. And each of those groups is represented on our steering committee and make decisions overall. So we select the faculty, and one of the first things they do in their commitment is they come to attend what used to be a three-week the first year and now is a six-day institute. It used to be nine, so it's not as dramatic as it sounds. So a nine-day institute is now a six-day institute because we've learned a little bit about how much is possible and really how we can make the most of people's time and not introduce too many ideas at once. They start with that six-day institute with all of the faculty attending. That's a mandatory attendance to come, though they like it once they're there. And those sessions are organized and led by the faculty themselves and by other campus experts who come and talk about different issues. It's a very collegial sort of institute, and Pat will talk about it a little bit more. And that's the kickoff for a one-year experience. The rest of the year that the faculty spend, they spend working with an I-team or an implementation team. And that team is a collaborative group of a librarian and somebody from ETS, and somebody from the Graduate Student Instructor Teaching and Resource Center who are specially identified to deal with the issues of that particular course. And they work with them throughout that whole semester, developing the assignment for that course and helping them implement it. Sometimes the course is taught both fall and spring, and so we help them through two semesters of refining and learning based on what that they've tried. We have lots of surveys and other things that we help them do, and we'll talk about that at the end and as we discuss the evaluation and assessment and how we help faculty see what works and doesn't work, and we'll talk about that too. So it's a pretty full year, starting with the institute, Lots of conversations in between, and the class is actually happening. And at the end, we also have some meetings and events that they work on as well. So it's kind of a quick snapshot of the summary. There's lots of involvement that we'll highlight, and I think one of the first things to mention is the campus partnership. A really important part of this grant is the collaboration between these groups. It is not the library only that's setting our goals, but each of the campus groups come together and help us decide what we want to focus on and what we're going to evaluate in the end. One of our campus's goals was to make sure that each of those groups found some way to do what they were already doing, but better. So we could coordinate, for example, special events that each of those groups had in some sort of shared calendaring system. And that was one of the first approaches, so that faculty would have one place to look to find the kinds of support that they wanted or needed for their particular course. We're also looking to find ways to have those implementation teams be available for the faculty beyond that semester that they redesign that one assignment in case they redesign others. So that partnership is a really important approach for us. Certainly, I think I've heard all of the same kinds of campus units that we partner with. I've heard those same names for your own campus here, and I've actually met some of the people from some of those units, and I think Cornell already has so much potential and so many things already started in that area. It's probably not going to be nearly as hard for you as it seemed like it was for us to get those partnerships started. We work with each of those groups throughout the year and have ongoing conversations about what our goals are for the Institute and for the faculty and for long after the Institute, what we want to do when our money's gone from the grant, how we want to sustain these partnerships. And some of the things that we've worked on are collaborative events on campus. We host an every 2-year campus symposium on some sort of teaching and learning topic, and that is open to all faculty and staff and students on campus. We usually pick some kind of theme, and 2 years ago it was on this theme of undergraduate research and how to support it in large enrollment classes. So we could hear from the faculty and the other attendees what their current challenges were. We could share with them models from what faculty who have gone through this program already, what they've learned and tried that worked. And we could also hear from them what they thought some of their challenges were that we needed to address on campus so that it would make it more available in more classes. So those types of events, as well as just smaller scale partnerships, have been one outgrowth of this this grant. I'm going to turn over to Pat so she can tell you a little bit about the Institute itself and what we do and how it's structured and what comes of it.
Thank you, Beth.
The problem with working with someone like Beth is she's so thorough. I may be repeating a few things that she said, but I always think in a setting like this, sometimes it's useful to hear it more than once. The goals for our institute in some ways mirror the goals of the program. We wanted to create an environment that would enable faculty to get together and discuss a range of topics related to developing effective research assignments for students that would challenge them to engage with the library's collections, be they print or digital. And we do this through that consultative model that Beth mentioned, the implementation teams. And actually, the members of the implementation teams also now attend the Institute. The second goal of the Institute is to build on and continue to develop the partnership between the academic partners, the Office of Educational Development, Graduate Student Instructor Training Center, Educational Technology Services, and American Cultures, which Beth already mentioned. A third goal of the Institute was to widen the implementation and impact of research-based activities on the undergraduates' learning experience while they're with us and the undergraduate curriculum. And we do this by focusing on courses that we think will have the greatest impact, the large enrollments, the course requirements, the core courses, things of that nature. Our faculty participants are made up of ladder-ranked faculty and lecturers, who all of whom have to be scheduled to teach the course that they intend to redesign in either the subsequent fall or the subsequent spring following their attendance at the Institute. And the selection of the fellows is, as I think Beth mentioned, done by the principal investigators, but the selection committee also does a review of the applications and makes recommendations and comments for their consideration. And I think we also mentioned the fact that preference is given to certain course profiles, large enrollment, American cultures, courses that are rotated among more than one faculty. We mentioned that. Okay. Expectations of the faculty fellows include a strong commitment from their department heads to try to institutionalize whatever changes that took place in the individual course that's being tackled during the institute to institutionalize it more widely within the department. The fellows are expected to attend all sessions of the institute, and they're also expected to, I don't know if I should say, work independently outside of the institute or do homework, but basically they're expected to do work outside of the institute in such a way that by the end of the institute they can they will have a revised research assignment. And this is done in consultation with their implementation teams, and that relationship is first introduced during the context of the institute. They're also expected, occasionally they do this during the institute, but more commonly after the institute, to develop an implementation plan to introduce this new assignment within the class. The format for the institute has evolved quite a bit over time, and it has been informed by the post-institute evaluations that are administered on the last day, as well as comments that are submitted through the course management system or individually to either Beth or I. And some of the changes that we made based on these comments over these 4 years has been that we've reduced the amount of readings and outside work outside of the institute. We've dropped some of the content, and we've really refocused the emphasis on the research assignment itself, as opposed to originally we were like overly ambitious and we wanted, you know, a revised syllabus and we wanted an assessment plan and we wanted all these things. But realistically, we think that probably the most important thing is the research assignment that will be given to the students. The format is offered on alternate days, and it lasts from 8:30 in the morning until 2:30 in the afternoon, and including the lunch that usually has a discussion topic of some sort that has been determined in advance. We've tried to set it up in such a way that it's a peer-to-peer model for learning. And our role, the people who participate in the institute, apart from the fellows, is to sort of facilitate the discussion on certain targeted topics rather than having formal lectures such as this. We've modeled an online learning environment, so the institute has its own course website so that the faculty have an opportunity to experience what it's like to use a course management system from the student perspective. And we've tried wherever possible to model good instructional practices and active learning approaches. The institute content follows a certain progression. In the beginning, the faculty are asked to reflect upon their own initial research experiences as young people, as undergraduates, and then we expose them to sort of today's learner, today's undergraduate learner. And then lastly, using those two data streams, we ask them to consider how they might redesign their research assignment or their syllabus given this reflective exercise and their observations about the changes in today's learners. We have the website up here of the institute, and actually if I scroll down here you could see, you could actually call up the program, the curriculum for each year, the evaluations for each year, and the staff of facilitators and so forth. So I encourage you to take a look at that later on. After the institute, we have built in a series of supports. We mentioned the implementation teams already. We have a semi-annual program of salons where we pull together all the cohorts for a late afternoon event. One of the things we ask them to do towards the end of the institute is identify topics that they would like to continue to discuss or pursue, and we use that as our guidepost for determining what's the next topic of the salon is going to be. And I contact one or two of the fellows and ask them to work with me to organize this late afternoon session, which is informal. We host it in a very nice location. We provide the best food and beverages that we can and create an environment where they can just feel comfortable coming together, meeting each other, and talking about a topic that we know is going to be of interest to them. We also have a program of post-institute funding, so any fellow who wishes can or automatically qualifies for $1,000 in educational technology funds or services. $2,000 in library collections money for either the purchase of collections to support their course or the digitization of materials to support it. And then we also, most recently, I guess in the last 2 years, have an innovation funding program that's earmarked for proposals that address the institutionalization of changes that they may have made in their individual course, the assessment of the research assignment experience on student learning overall, the development of shareable teaching tools and products, or the encouragement of the building of similar cohorts within their independent departments. So there are certain things that we're hoping to particularly support, but I think they can pretty much propose whatever they like, and we will consider it. In terms of the accomplishments, I think that was one thing Cornelia had asked us to talk about. To date, we, in 4 years, have had 45 faculty attend the Institute, and we only have statistics for 2 years at this point from the central campus, but from fall 2003 to fall 2005, there have been 52 courses, Mellon courses, that have been offered. So we can figure that our fellows are redesigning more than just the individual course that they brought to the Institute. About half of them have enrollments of over 100 students, and we have calculated that we have reached about 7,800 students through one way or another through the Mellon assignments and experiences. We receive very high ratings from our faculty on the Institute, both in terms of its overall value and their satisfaction with the quality of programming. We've developed pedagogical and assessment expertise among the library staff, which is, I think, is a major bonus of this project. We've created shareable and adaptable products and approaches and made them available to anyone who is interested. I think a really important impact is it's altered faculty perceptions of the library and what librarians can bring to the educational enterprise and to this, the challenge of engaging students. The project partners, I think, have developed a better understanding of what each one of us brings to the table, what our roles are, what our strengths are, and how we can work together. And this has led to other campus-wide collaborations, one of which Beth mentioned, which was the eBerkeley Symposium. But we've also become active contributors to the development of the new campus course management system called eBerkeley, the first-year experience that Beth talked about, and a new project that's just getting underway on learning spaces within the libraries.
Okay, so we have about 5 minutes left or less. I did that. So what I'll try and do is talk a little bit about the faculty-librarian collaboration, because I think that that's it's central to this whole project of what we were trying to accomplish. So the Institute sets out this first experience where the faculty are brought together, often they've never met each other before. Usually they're from different departments. Occasionally we've had it where two people from the same department have come. It's a really sort of, I think, liberating experience. Most of the faculty report that one of the greatest things for them, and probably true at similar institutes that you have here, I think someone mentioned the Thornhill Institute the other day, that those kinds of experiences allow faculty from different departments to get together and with the staff from other areas, and they can talk about the things they're really interested in doing in their courses that maybe they haven't had another forum to talk about before. And having librarians and instructional technology people and other kinds of pedagogy experts together at the table talking at once helps inform the design of a particular course. Whereas in the past, each of those faculty had to go to maybe five different buildings to get some input about their course, and everybody was recommending kind of different things because they were just looking from their own perspective. Now bringing these groups together, it helps them say, well, okay, you're teaching Chemistry 1A, and that course has 1,300 students and 45 GSIs, and it's in these two auditoriums, and you have certain sections. It could be from the GSI standpoint, there's certain recommendations they'll have. That when you add the person who has the instructional technology background, they'll see a different way of using the course management system with those groups. And then maybe when you add the librarian to the conversation, they'll say, well, that's true, you could just post those reserves there, but if you really want students to engage with this assignment, then maybe we could design it this different way. So all three of them brought together really helped change the nature of, I think, what's recommended. And that was one of the biggest lessons we learned from our pilot year to the next 3 years of our grant that followed. the first year we didn't have this support team together. And so each faculty was still, just as we are in our campus generally, running between departments and trying to pull together all the expertise. We'd raise the awareness for them that all these different units could bring something to the table and help inform their course, but we hadn't yet made it easy for them to get that support. And so by bringing all of these groups together and creating a forum around their schedule and around the timeline of their course, it helped redesign the course before it was taught. I think most of us have the experience that a lot of courses are underway, and that's when the faculty member may notice that there's something that would be helpful to add to the course, or some, oh wow, this group of students doesn't seem to know this particular thing, I'll need to find some way to resolve that at this point. And so it's sort of a last minute call, which of course we're there for that, the sort of emergency system. But what we also use is an opportunity within this Mellon program that the true difference is that it's in advance of that. So when there's just a little bit more time for free thinking in that summer, if you can push aside all the other research interests and all the other vacation interests and other things competing for time, can save those 6 days, then it really creates an opportunity to think about the course and the assignments differently than when you're in the moment of teaching the class and you have 100 students looking at you expectantly, and any move you make sort of shifts the whole nature of the attention and the direction of the class. So to do it in advance is a really, I think, important component of this, and something that wouldn't be the same if you were to offer the same kind of institute mid-year or in even maybe over a winter break. The collaborations have had, every person brings their own interests, and so everyone finds different things about this research-based learning that works for them or that's different. I wanted to point out to you on the website, which I'm not sure, did you include the URL on the handouts?
It's on the colored handout.
Okay. On the colored handout is a URL, apparently, hopefully for this site. And so you would probably get to this page. And I didn't plan to talk too much about the website, but under a section about publicity, one thing I wanted to point out is that we do have videos. And one reason we did this is that we didn't want to keep asking the same faculty and students over and over what they thought and document it, that we thought that they could tell their own story. We'd let them talk about what was important to them. And so under these videos that Pat and someone from our media center, Ann Mon, did, is go out and talk to the various faculty that we worked with and students, and most of these are just from the first year, actually, but ask them various questions, and we tried to group them under certain categories. And to give you an idea of what is the impact of all of this that we've been talking about and why are we doing it, under a section I wanted to show you, for example, one of the students, Molly Caselli, who was in a History 7B class. I'm not sure if she tells you that. A History 7B class, which takes primary sources and has students really go find something and then put some context to it and write an essay around it. And one thing that we do through the process with this research-based learning that's a little different than other assignments is we really emphasize the research process as much or more than the research product that students create. So it's not just about that final report that they write, but in some aspect of what they're asked to do, they're asked to write how they went about what they found and why they made certain kinds of decisions, and trying to really have them articulate what they did. And we find that that really helps drive home some particular elements of the process that are translatable then to other classes. And that's one thing that the students talk about as being important. Molly talks a little bit about why she found, and I hope the volume will work here, what she thought about this particular assignment in this class. And the other person I'll show is Joseph Scalise, who was in a similar class, and they hadn't known each other before this class, but you can get some other idea of the benefits of these kinds of assignments, even in a humanities class where they work independently.
The way that that course was undertaken, with us being allowed to undertake research that really gave life to the history material, shapes the way I perceive American history now, the interactions that we have with other countries, specifically because my research has to do with other work in the Philippines. But beyond that, the credibility that I grant things that I've taken, I now approach them in a very analytical way, I would like to think, and that I would feel compelled to research beneath and beyond what I am being given, what I'm being told.
you get some of their nature that comes through, and they're, I think they're, it's interesting to see their stories differently than if I just told you that's what they said. There's a lot of interesting ones from the faculty who actually attend the Institute who talk about how they really see the process so differently, how they feel like they're a much better teacher now because they're starting to look at different parts, or how things really connect with them that they realize weren't happening before. So this really isn't just about library collections, but it really looks at sort of the role of the library in a very different way of how do we connect users to using the collections to learning more with them, or discovering new voices from them, or realizing how to evaluate that information in a way that contextualizes it within other events, that there's not always one right answer, and that they're not going to just find that one right answer by typing it into Google and finding the answer pop up within the first five hits. A lot of that is stuff that the students, when you really talk to them, realize on some level, but really get them to practice those things and highlight them, and to talk to the faculty about how important it is to not just look at the final research paper as the product, but really what informs them finding the right kinds of sources. And yes, we all might look at bibliographies to get some understanding of what sorts of things people look at, and sometimes you can tell from that, and sometimes you cannot tell from that really why they made choices. And sometimes they were excellent sources to use anyway, so you can't really discover that. But to have them write a reflective essay, or to break down the pieces that they do so there's some interim component that they're writing before they actually get to a final paper, is really one of the things that most of the faculty really own when they leave the Institute. Most of the classes I mentioned to you are large enrollment classes, and a lot of the questions we get is, how could you really do any kind of undergraduate research in such a large enrollment class? And one thing is that we have a very liberal interpretation of the term research. So we're not always asking people to write a sort of mini thesis or even really a research paper all the time. In one of the political science classes, it was actually an upper division class, they did a research prospectus where they really had to choose a research question that was a good research question, and that took, I think she said, about a quarter of the class to really work through and refine what were good questions in this area and what is really worth researching and what hasn't been addressed, and that was an important skill to her. But also then drafting the prospectus that said, here's how I plan to go about this, here's some of the other readings I've done, here's where the areas are interesting, here are the key writers, and here's my citations, but didn't really write the rest of the paper. So in that course, they weren't working on their writing skills, which are important and should be in some classes, but not always in every class. And so it helped them give highlight to some of the other areas that she thought were important and that worked for them. In other classes, there are different elements, so it's not always that. Sometimes they'll do a short research assignment that informs some other piece. Maybe they'll compare, for example, in the sociology class, one of the issues is doing public sociology and really looking at sociology in the interest of some of our public issues and shared issues. And one of the ideas that this particular professor wanted to do was to have students really think about inequality or quality in the classroom and who comes to college and what sort of privileges they had and what informs that. And Berkeley's a pretty diverse campus. There's lots of first-generation students at Berkeley. And it's an interesting discussion, she says, about privilege and people who didn't think they were privileged who come to this class, and they start to embrace a lot of these interesting discussions about really something that becomes personal to them. So it's a sociology class. It's a little bit removed, but you start talking about their experiences and the kinds of education they have, and they start comparing their experiences to data they can find from educational statistics and education sites, and start to think about, is this my experience? Where do I fall within this, or where am I different? And one of the key principles we try to talk about in the Institute is moving students from an opinion culture to an evidence culture, and to try and really make clear to them that they can have their own opinions, but how do they inform those and think about those, and that's a different kind of discussion and a different kind of product we're looking for. And so her example in a class that was about 350 students with only two readers and no actual graduate student instructor, so no sections, was to take that whole class as a group in a theater-style room and try and make that kind of research and active learning assignment come alive. And she did that by dividing the class informally into research groups that were centered around different school districts that were in the area, for students to start to take their own experience and compare that to particular school districts that they could share and work on together. Through that, they had natural affinity groups that they could talk to about certain issues, and then they could take the data that each of the groups were finding and compare that data with the other classes that the other groups were working on. So everyone had a shared interest in looking at the whole overall and starting to put that into a global picture. And as you can see from that kind of example, this is not about a one-hour change of a course. This is about really reframing the whole nature of the course. And how do students learn the content that's important and still get all those principles down, but maybe in a way that really sticks with them or comes alive with them because they've practiced something, they've analyzed something, they've contributed to a big picture. And actually, most often these assignments, if they're crafted well, engage the students in using their time outside of the classroom instead of just the time in the classroom or reading a textbook, but to really be engaged, like these two students were, to go after finding more and more information, spending their extra time because it's personally motivating to them to do so, and they're so interested in the question you're giving them that they want to invest more time in that. I can talk to you for hours about faculty-librarian collaboration, so I won't keep going on, but I will tell you there's a huge shift for the library side as well. Within our libraries, there was only a small group of staff who really had instruction as the primary component of their job. There's lots of library staff who have instruction as some component of their positions. And so there's a lot there, similar to how we look at faculty, to reshaping within libraries how we see instruction as being one component. Because it takes a lot to get to this collaboration from all aspects. There's how we work together with all of these disparate groups on campus, knowing issues related to instructional technology and assessment and instructional design and the subject matter, and how do you pull all those things together within a relatively small number of people to make good decisions, and how do you organizationally find the time to do all of this and work with the classes and the department. So those are some of the things we've started to work on and that we've worked on for instructor development to make sure people feel a little more prepared for these kinds of throwing themselves at these courses and trying to resolve these really difficult issues. I'm happy to talk about some of those things in the session that follows this as well, but that's kind of a general overview of the mess that we're in and how we're making sense of it and how you can see some of the products of what we're getting from the students, and actually the faculty tell some things that just make me cry. So you can hear some of the stories from them as well. I want to give Pat just a little bit of time to give you an overview. Do you still want to give an overview? Okay. A really quick about the evaluation and assessment, and then we'll take questions.
Sure. I'm going to jet through this because I really want to leave time for you to ask your questions as well. But simply to say that the evaluation and assessment is guided by the goals of the grant, really, which are to create a sustainable model for introducing changes into courses and curricula to create a community of fellows that demonstrate a commitment to student learning around active engagement activities, to compile student performance data, strengthen collaboration among the partners, and enhance the awareness and use of campus collections. So you can imagine in those five broad areas how many individual questions we might want to answer. And I think when we really tried to do that, we came up with this enormous laundry list of 65 questions or 75 questions. So we quickly realized that we didn't have the capacity to really process that. So we tried to group our questions around three primary focuses. The first of which was, what have been the impacts of our program on individual faculty at Berkeley? How has the program influenced their teaching? What are the professional and personal benefits they've derived from their participation? And what obstacles they've incorporated on the campus to trying to implement some of the changes that they hope to do? The second focus was around what have been the impacts of the program on the campus culture of learning? And by this, we're looking at such things as the effects on inter- and interdepartmental cooperation and interactions in terms of faculty development and support, what elements are required to effectively redesign a course, what are the characteristics of environments that support this type of work, those sorts of issues. The third area of interest is what have been the impacts on of the program on student learning. And we measure that through a number of different ways, student perceptions of their learning, faculty perceptions of their learning. There are all sorts of subcategories, but that'll give you an idea of the three themes that we think are most important and that will really put an imprint of meaning on what we do and the data that we collect surrounding it. And the rest we can cover in questions. Oh, okay. Well, so how about some questions? Yeah.
Is it sustainable, and how are you envisioning its sustainability if that's
I actually think that the only, I should, well, okay, this is being recorded. So what I should say is that, you're supposed to warn me. The primary benefit of the original grant, I think, is the prestige that came from the Mellon Foundation, and that it brought focus to this area. Certainly it was helpful to have money as well. But I think if you really get down to the kinds of things that we're going to sustain, the things that were the most important, and it's hard to separate because sometimes it took certain other things we've been through over the past 3 or 4 years and certain approaches to get us to where we're now prepared to really sustain in a more embedded way, in a more natural way within our organizations. But primarily money went towards the faculty stipends. Each faculty got essentially $2,000. So if you figure that you have a maximum, we can only really support 15 a year, that's $30,000. Probably on a campus you could find that somewhere from a donor. It's not an overwhelming amount of money, but maybe not. We also found that there's actually a lot of grants that we already give to faculty in designing, redesigning their courses, whether it's instructional technology grants or the graduate student instructor grants, and some money from our campus chancellor that went to a presidential chair teaching fellows grant. And so it's possible that our campus can redirect that money to still provide some stipends. So that's one element that was most important to us. The things that I think that will come about that are sustainable, it's hard to say. We're really waiting to hear what happens in our evaluation that's going to come from all 4 years. And the first cohort of faculty have had 3 years to process and really boil down what they think. Some of them have actually boiled up in the sense that at first they were pretty low key about what they thought that they would implement, and it took them about a year, and they heard others doing things, and then they started trying things, and now they're really committed and doing more than they were the year after they went to the Institute. Others have really launched into it wholehearted. We even tried to encourage them not to do certain things, like, oh, that's gonna be way too difficult, and they did it anyway. And then they would admit sometimes, well, that was really difficult, but I liked it, so we would modify slightly. So some of them have ramped into what I think is a more sustainable approach for their particular class. So there have been some of those changes, and we'd like to take kind of a step back with the evaluation and see what worked and didn't work. Interestingly, we thought as the steering committee that this institute would be the thing that would probably go, because it does take a lot of coordination and a lot of time. And I think from all the people who attend, that's the thing that they think absolutely cannot go in person. We thought that, okay, well, we could put these tips and materials that we've developed and best practices and samples of products up on the website. And then faculty who were interested and approached us in a consultative way about things they wanted to do, we could point them to that. And most of the faculty informally have told us, no, the most important piece of the Institute is really about us all being together, about forcing us to make the time free in our schedule to be together and to develop this stuff. And once you're committed enough to apply, then you're probably going to be committed enough to trying it. So it's just getting over that first hurdle. But interestingly, word of mouth is how we got a lot of the applicants in this final cohort. And there was a sharp increase in the number of full faculty that applied this year, which is our last year. So in the beginning, it was sort of those early adopters. A lot of them were new to campus. Some of them had recently come from other campuses and had been doing this sort of thing, and that seemed pretty natural to them. A couple of our previous fellows have been high school instructors, so that was pretty natural to them. What we're finding now is we're reaching into a different level of the faculty who are willing to experiment and happy to know that we're not going to try and take over their whole course or their whole life or something. I also think it's changed the nature of how we have discussions about undergraduate research on our campus. So we're starting to think new questions. In preparation for the eBerkeley Symposium, we had three people went out and interviewed about 20 to 25 faculty on campus that were not necessarily randomly selected, but people who were doing a lot of, who were involved with a lot of issues, not necessarily undergraduate issues, and talked to those faculty. And those interviews are really rich with a lot of really important insights about what does and doesn't work on campus, the problems with the curriculum that they see from their own space and what students do or don't know. Our curriculum's pretty flexible, I guess you'd say. And so a freshman can take any classes, basically. Maybe not a senior thesis class, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone's done it. So it's open, there's really few prerequisites. Most of the prerequisites are like a choice among six. So you can't really plan a very set schedule of, okay, freshmen will all learn package A. This would be the really easy way to do it. And sophomores would learn package B, and then they'd move to package C, and by the end they're done. No, doesn't work that way. So So we're really kind of accepting of any of the faculty who want to come forward and helping them redesign courses along the way and helping them pick appropriate skills. But we're also realizing that the institution does have some responsibility to create certain moments in time that students can, if they're interested, improve their skills or increase their awareness. So we're looking really at first incoming students, new students, and transfer students, and creating an experience for them in that summer before they start campus to really say, this is what it is about being at a research institution, and this is how you can engage in that. This is what the faculty do here. These are the kinds of products, and this is what your learning should look like while you're on campus. And that's a big change for us, and that's one of the things that I think will be very sustainable, because we can do this each year. We're trying to find a way to have it be something that can be delivered either online or in a DVD, and in a way that also has a collaborative environment that people can start talking, students to each other. But then when they come to campus that first week before classes start, they actually meet the faculty they've seen. They start to get an idea of what happens and make that connection to really what's there. And we're telling them then that how you learn at college is a lot different than coming to class and sitting and lecturing and turning in your homework and that be it. Although, of course, some classes might still be a little bit like that, but that's what we're shooting for. And so I think there's some outcomes from that, collaborations and how we're approaching. I think we're all committed to our units still working together. We've talked about creating a voucher system. So all new, we offer all of our services already to all of our faculty, but a lot of people just don't know that these things are available. These kinds of consultations or support or ideas or technological help is already out there for them, and we could support them, they just had to ask. So we're thinking of finding new ways to market those kinds of things, and some like vouchers for new faculty that come with their products. They see kind of what's available in a menu of the services and have it packaged. So in a lot of ways, I'm not trying to say that the money wasn't helpful, because it certainly was. But in a lot of ways, most of the things that we're aiming for are things that are really about doing what we can already do, but do it better and provide it in a better way, provide it in really a way that says we want to continue to do this. And a lot of the marketing component of it is because our faculty are going back to their departments and talking to other people in their departments and saying, hey, I had this really good experience in my class. And that's what's really driving us to sustain certain pieces is what people keep asking for. It's a long answer to your question, but I'll tell you more if you have specific questions. More to add to that?
Only that I don't think it's necessarily on us to keep sustaining it. I mean, the theme that I've heard from the students, from the faculty, is that they never want to go back to doing things the way they used to do them. And I think that that is equally true of our academic partners. I really believe, say, for example, the Graduate Student Instructor and Training Center, they're not going to train their graduate student instructors the way they used to before they had the experience with Mellon. I'm sure that they will recognize and implement certain elements that will then come up through a whole new generation of college instructors, that a piece that may not have been there strongly in the past. So,
you're all afraid to ask questions now because we're asking them.
What other questions do you have?
Or observations, not questions, yeah. Comments.
Okay.
Can you talk about the question of assessment?
Would
you like me to?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
In general. Well, we spent a lot of time talking about assessment. One of the goals that Pat mentioned was that we wanted to look at our impact on student learning and improving student learning. And we realized over time how wrong that really was, that we couldn't really do that. Within this grant, we didn't spend the first year, which we could have, I suppose, done had we thought about it, studying a particular cohort of students and then tracking them through college to try and look at them as individuals. Instead, we started off by working with faculty to redesign courses. So we weren't really looking at how students were before this grant and how students were after. Instead, we were just looking at how well does this course and this approach of teaching seem to engage students, and do they walk away with skills that we think are good skills and done reasonably well. And we work with each of the faculty differently. One thing we realize, as I mentioned, is that you can't package these skills year by year or say all freshmen will learn a certain group of things and then test those to a T or through some kind of a checklist or Scantron kind of test. And so we're trying to really honor that these skills are often best shown in the products of what students do. And so we've really been looking at the assignments that students turn in to try and analyze kind of what the skill levels for those are. We've looked at some of the projects that are purportedly information literacy assessment tests, and they could be good for certain environments, but my personal opinion is they're not right for Berkeley. We have this really messy but rich sort of environment where students can take the courses they're interested in as they feel prepared for them and as they're interested in them. So students all progress at very different levels and very different skills, and so we're trying to recognize that, honor that, and look class by class with each instructor to see how can we best assess or look at what students are doing in that particular course, as opposed to comparing them course to course. I think there might be some benefit over time for us to try and find something that we can look at to see what is the contribution to student learning, or is this an important thing for students to learn? We might want to ask some of those questions. But I don't think we're going to find it from this particular approach, because one thing we really wanted to do is most important to us, and it may not have come through from our list of the three areas we want to look at, but most important to us is changing the campus culture and individual faculty support and student learning around course by course, and not looking to say, overall, do Berkeley students do something in a particular way? So it's important for us to look course by course at the products those students are creating and look at it based on what that instructor has chosen as their own goals and their own learning outcomes. What do I want students to know how to do? What I put most emphasis on in this course, and helping them see from the products that the students turn in, did they do well on those things you chose, not on a national standard or a particular test? It's tricky. I think that we'll increasingly be pushed to try and find some national assessment, and we should try and, I think, articulate for ourselves how we think to do that, as opposed to have them pushed upon us from somewhere else. But at least for me right now, the tests that are available out there don't quite meet what we're looking for. And we're trying to pilot within this, looking at the samples of student work from across various classes to see if we can come up with some questions that we think, are these the kinds of things that librarians should be looking at? Are they the kinds of things that the faculty and the GSIs look at or don't look at? There's a side project, which I haven't mentioned to you yet, which is our library prize for undergraduate research, which is separate from the Mellon Grant. And some of you may or may not have heard about this. At Berkeley about two years ago, we started a project that gave awards to undergraduates for their research projects. And there's a different prize award for lower division students than upper division students, so that honors that progression that students develop their skills over time and should get better and better, and doesn't just reward the senior doing something the best. It also is an interesting project, and it doesn't look at those final papers, but as I was talking before about the research process, it has students write a reflective essay about the paper they do or the project. There was one environmental design class that they did these sort of visual blocks that turned around and showed different spaces that were changing in the blocks, and so it wasn't a research paper. Their final product of research was this visual entity, this 3D model, but their research essay still told the process they went through and what they encountered and what they looked in and what informed their decisions. And that particular thing, students from any discipline can turn in their project, and the judges are three faculty or four faculty and three librarians, and together they look at all of these and they determine the awards to give out, sort of given annually in the spring. And what's really powerful is to look at the projects that students turn in and what they talk about how they went about their research and what kinds of sources they consulted and how they made distinctions between the content and what connections they made. And it's interesting to the faculty who come from other areas to be looking at products of papers that aren't from their department. So sometimes you'll hear a faculty member from English say, I don't know anything about physics, and I have to read this physics paper, this economics paper. But it's kind of liberating because everybody there doesn't know something. And you see these products and you think, wow, our students are just so absolutely amazing. And I'm sure you had the same experience. But we can then create exhibits from those. And what the students have told us in looking at exhibits about other student work is they see their peer having tackled a research topic that is kind of at their level of understanding. And one of the things that we look at is where they hit obstacles and how they overcame them. And that's the part that the students say is most revealing to them, because they kind of care about the product, but they really are trying to figure out, how do I get around it and how do I make the most of this? And so those are some of the things I think are most powerful lessons that we can talk about and look at their accomplishments as opposed to the measurement angle.
Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing about your project and the Institute. Your excitement is contagious and really inspiring to us. So thank you so much for coming and taking the
thank
time
you for having
to journey all the way.